Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum Ben Moshe. Hello. Today we're going to talk to Dr. Lightman about the different amazing ideas that the great Kabbalist Yehuda Ashlag wrote about in his article, The Freedom, that was published in the 1930s. This is an article that can give us a completely new perspective on life. Be with us, Tal, please. Yeah, on our previous talk, we talked about how Kabbalist perceives nature. As you said, that he sees nature as something transparent. And he tells us about the different processes in nature from which we can understand many things about ourselves and our future and how can we influence it. And in the article, he explains about the different laws of nature that control us and eventually how do we become free. So we talked about the law of causality in nature, that everything has a reason, and also we are a part of a chain of cause and consequence that's not determined by us. And also the author says that everything that exists is determined by four factors that precede it, whether it's myself or anything else in nature. So in order to understand these four factors, the author gives us wheat as an example, a grain of wheat. And he says that the first cause is the source. The source is what makes the wheat. Wheat instead of making it barley or anything else. The next factor is the way that wheat develops, the process of change that it goes through that makes it more or less qualitative. The third factor is the interaction that that grain has with its environment, with the soil, water, sun, anything that it interacts with that influences its development. And the last factor are external reasons that aren't directly related to the wheat. Could be an animal walking by or something that happens in the environment that influences that grain. And he says that this also applies to us. These four factors also apply to us as human beings. And what intrigues me is the source, the essence. And he continues and says that this essence exists in everyone. It changes form, it can dress in a new form, but it always, this essence never changes. What is this factor, this essence, unchanging essence that exists in all of us? Because we're human beings. Let's start from the simplest level. We're human beings, and as I develop as a human being. I'll never become an animal, at least physically. I am who I am, meaning at least my DNA and all of my data. Now the question is, where does this data come from? This is something that I can't determine anything about. What can I determine? He explains that I have to put myself, or my progenitors have to put me under special conditions so that all of my factors that are, let's call them, latent, so that I'll be able to develop them in the most correct way. What is there about this source, my preliminary matter? In terms of the wisdom of Kabbalah, my final state exists there, that maybe only in so and so many years and so many states I'll develop them, and I'll develop them for sure. Only the question is, in what way? In a short and convenient way called the path of hastening, or in a long and bitter way called in its due time, in Hebrew, be'ito. But one way or another, I'll have to develop them. They exist in me now already, and I'll have to reach their final state. This is what the wisdom of Kabbalah reveals to us. There's nothing by chance. All in all, the wisdom of Kabbalah reveals all of the factors to us and explains where does nature or the creator, doesn't matter how you call it, leaves me free choice. Things that I can influence. I can't change myself into a different creature. It's like a grain of wheat can't become barley. But I can influence myself, and of course this also depends on my different factors, my parents, the environment, and so on. But so that I'll be able to develop in a very good, nice, soft, quick way from the state that I was born in, where I already have all of these factors, where I disconnected from my progenitors, and until I reach my final form, it's possible that already in this life, I can make this leap and reach my final form. What do you mean by final form? When a person grows up, he wants to be successful. It doesn't matter what a person wants. It's not about that. That's of no interest to us, that he's born and he wants something, and what does he understand about what does he want? That later on he's inflated with different theories and knowledge, and he thinks that this is something that he wants. Poor guy, he's confused. Is there something hidden in each of us that we can realize? Exactly, to realize that kernel, that force that exists in us, and to bring that to development, and not that I'm influenced by different environmental influences and do what they cause me to do. This I don't want. Suddenly, there's socialists, fascists, suddenly I'm into science, music. Suddenly I become a part of some party and I'm influenced by them, or I deviate from the path of good altogether. I go into drugs or who knows what. I don't want to be influenced by any environment before I have the basis, before I understand how to choose the right environment, because the environment is extremely influential. And therefore, the wisdom of Kabbalah, first of all, explains the influence of the environment, the power of the influence of the environment over man. You said that every person has a certain essence. What is that? A source. Our source is called the root of our soul. And just like wheat will always remain wheat, the very same way I, for example, have the root of my soul, that I can't change in any way this given. The only thing that I can change are the external factors for them to influence the root of my soul, to develop that root in the best possible way. What is the root of the soul, and how is it expressed later on? It's simple. Just like we have a grain of wheat or of an apple, and then you get the tree with many apples on it and so on, the very same way, I have the root of my soul, out of which I get many fruits, spiritual fruits. What grows from the grain of a person, from his source? That's his inner vessel, the root of the soul. There's nothing to add here. Usually a person feels that his realization is his ability to influence others, to give something to the world. No. Sure, it's a person's inclination to give something to the world, to show himself. It's not that he wants to give something to the world, but he wants to prove to himself that he determines that he exists and that he's important, to reveal his uniqueness, his essence. Yeah, it's the egoistic drive that exists in him. But you're saying that besides that drive, a person has an even better option to reveal. No, that egoistic drive also has to push a person to attain, to reveal the root of his soul. And then that uniqueness that he wants to reveal in himself, where is it? It's in him. That's his spiritual seed. Where else could it be? So that's interesting. We're born into this world and we feel that there's something about us, that there has to be something special about us that doesn't exist in anyone else, but we don't always know how to extract it. You're saying that for this we need an environment. Right, only by the right environment can we develop our internality. Otherwise, one way or another, we'll be under the influence of some environment that will push us and lead us to develop other things. So how can we really influence our source, our essence? What is that environment that develops us? The wise, educated people that speak about the meaning of life, its purpose, people that show me an example of how should I behave in order to develop the root of my soul, my eternal part, because I consist of two parts, man and beast. So as long as my beast, namely, as long as my body is alive, I have to develop the human part in me, and therefore I'm always in this inner kind of collision between these two levels, these two degrees. These two degrees operate in me in a very special way. The animate part in me, my corporeal ego, pulls me in the direction of different pleasures. And the more inner part in me, my soul, constantly awakens me to achieve something eternal, whole, complete, perfect, exalted. And then I'm in between these two forces where I'm dependent on my environment in terms of to what extent will I let go of the one and be drawn to the other. So the environment is the soil that gives me nutrition and minerals and water and so on. Yeah, what does the environment give? The environment leads me in one direction and disconnects me from the other. It has both the pulling and also pushing force. It helps me focus on what's important. Yeah, it all depends on the environment. Eventually, this is what happens. I wanted to ask about this inner seed of a person that you call the root of the soul. Each of us has this essence which is unique only for myself and no one else has it. Right. If so, how can other people help me develop my special essence, my seed, which is only mine? If you go into an environment where there are other people that are concerned with developing the root of their soul, and from that root of the soul to develop their soul, it's like a seed that you put in the ground, and from that seed you get many crops, for example. The very same way with the root of your soul, which is only the root. You have to sow it in the correct environment, and then from that you get the fruit, which is the soul. Yeah, but if my root is unique for me and yours is unique for you and so on and so forth, how can other people help me in this process of developing this inner point in me that exists only in me, that's unique only for me? No problem, because in the root of our soul, we're all connected to the same fruit. We're all in the same fruit, part of the same fruit. And if all of us interconnect correctly, then we reach a state where our connection brings us to that fruit that's called the fruit of the tree of knowledge, which is the upper attainment of the plan of creation, and this is how we should advance toward it. There's one more interesting thing that the author writes about in this article, that the seed, these inclinations of mine, I also got from my forefathers, from previous generations, meaning the most important thing that I have, which are my inner inclinations, I also actually got it from a chain of generations that, I don't know, maybe it's genetics or something else, which is actually who I am, right? So what does it mean that we have actually nothing of our own? Everything that we have, we actually got from someone or something. What do you mean that I have? Who am I? That's also a question that the author asks in the article. It's only the root of the soul. Besides that, everything else around it is data that accompanies the root of the soul. It's like in corporeality, that besides the seed that comes from the father and develops in the mother, a person has nothing else of his own. And also that isn't his, but it comes from his progenitors. In the article, he calls it hereditary possessions. Yeah. Okay, so if for a moment I cut myself off from the previous generations, I look only at this moment. There's me. Inside me, there's this special seed that is unique only for me, as he calls it, the source. It exists deep, deep inside me. It's unique. It's only mine. It's influenced by heredity, by... Yes, it is as if it was passed on to you from your progenitors. And you got it from them. Even though that it's possible that this is something that they do not discover, their transition. What was passed on to me? Passed on to you is that spark that has to become revealed in you, and it was passed on to you through your progenitors in a way that it passed through. I also think that the author says in that article that maybe the parents even have inclinations that are in contrast with the inclinations of their children. Where was it passed? Suppose Tal is my mother. No, you're looking at corporeality. The author is talking about subconscious. Yeah, but it's impossible to explain. A bit, something, Dr. Leitman. Even in our world, unrelated to the wisdom of Kabbalah, there are things that we can't explain. Things where we're in psychology, philosophy, you know, different things that they're kind of around the matter. Okay, I'll ask something different. If this inner essence of mine, the source, is unique only for me, what does it have to do with my progenitors, previous generations? Then it's no longer unique. It's related to previous generations. You said that this is unique only for me. But it comes from someone, actually, or from something. The thing is that it seems to you that the world is full of people and that they're all isolated from one another, that there's no connection between them. There aren't many people in the world. These are all cells of one body. What body? That's called Adam. What Adam? The general network in which we're all interconnected is called Adam. So why does one man get certain inclinations from previous generations and his brother gets different ones? What determines that? The root of the soul that a person has to realize, and if he realizes it correctly, then things will happen one way, and if he doesn't, then things will happen a different way. Just to see if I get it. We're parents, we have a few children. Each child gets a unique set of qualities that exactly fit that child's unique inner source or seed. Right? It's the external corporeal cover of the root of the soul, which is unique. Yeah. So even if I have a brother or a few brothers, each has of their own. Of course. The author writes about it that it's necessary to really keep and guard it, even in a good and developing environment. He says that this is the true possession of the individual and that it's forbidden to harm it. Right. Why? Because this is what a person has. He has to realize it correctly, to connect it with the same inclinations that exist in others that are corrected and bring it all to a general correction, that all of these root inclinations called the point in the heart, the root of the soul, its seed, for all of these seeds to develop correctly and connect into one complete soul. After the author speaks in this article about everyone having this unique thing that it's forbidden to harm, he talks about criticism that he really appreciates. He said that a society in which there's no criticism, it rots. On the one hand, everyone has a unique point of their own. On the other hand, there's criticism without which there's no life and development. Can you explain a bit about the right, correct kind of criticism? Because we all know how to give criticism. Incorrect, that's not good either. We don't know how to give correct criticism. We don't know how to criticize. Criticism, it means scrutinizing the results, the current and future phenomena that we want to avoid. What is criticism? Suppose I'm putting together a government audit committee that I have to examine everything that the state takes care of regarding the public. So you have to examine it. These are different means that you have to have and use. These are recommendations, new laws. Criticism or examination is everything. Our problem is that we don't criticize. We're all in our egoistic will to receive. And therefore, what kind of scrutiny, what kind of criticism do we have? We're all suspicious. You see the kind of audit committees that we have, and then we fight for who's going to be in that committee and what goes on there. To begin with, it's all distorted. So what is that criticism which is a basic condition for the development of society, as the author writes about? What are the conditions for rational criticism? Yeah, he says that without criticism, that if we all become one size, we all become the same, by this we destroy the unique seed in each and every one of us, and it's forbidden, that there has to be criticism, that it allows us actually to develop. What is that criticism that allows a society to develop in a good and healthy way? It's criticism through the eyes of those people that see the future. Wise is he who foresees the future. This is the kind of people that should be on the audit committee. They have to see what's going to grow from what's going on now and what needs to be changed now in order for the good and correct things to grow in the future. I think everyone's trying to do it, but not everyone's succeeding. We see everyone's willing, everyone knows how to rule the world. Right, but not everyone's succeeding. What's missing? It's not everyone succeeding. I see that no one's succeeding. Right, I don't see that anyone can foresee the future and lead us there correctly. For this, we need a Kabbalist. Because only he foresees the future. Only he sees the future states. How? Because he's engaged in the wisdom of Kabbalah. And then, through his connection with others in a small group, where he shapes the future state of humanity, where he forms it, as a result of the revelation of this instrument, he sees the future of the world. What is the future of the world? You see, the things that we talked about 20 years ago, everyone yelled at us, laughed at us. Today, no more. Because everything that we talked about, and you can find it all on the archive, today it's all becoming revealed. So, a Kabbalist, in his interaction with others, he creates a certain state which is similar to that state that the whole of humanity has to come to in the future, and this is how he foresees the future. Yeah. The author, he describes a society, not an individual person, but a group of people that foresee the future. All the more, let's do it. But he's asking, how does a Kabbalist see it? Of course, if we'll determine such a group of Kabbalists, like the Sanhedrin, for example, then it'll be a tremendous force, a real force in humanity that will reveal to humanity what has to be done in order for the future to be a good one. But also, we had such examples where they said what has to be done, the nation didn't do it, and therefore they've reached destruction and exile. Okay, I'd like to go back to something that you talked about in the beginning. You said that there's the final state that is actually immersed in the inner seed, in each and every one of us and in all of us together, because we're all interconnected in this one system called Adam. What is that final state, exalted state, that we as a mankind are headed toward? To be as one man and one heart, where we're all connected in mutual love. Okay, one more concept. In the beginning of the article, the author speaks about freedom of the angel of death. What is that? Death is our separation. Like he explains, that separation between the cells brings death to the body and disintegration. The very same way, if we connect all the cells, life starts flowing through them, and this is how we enliven our body. In the meantime, we're dead. So in the state of freedom, what's our life like? The upper force is flowing through us, fulfilling us, connecting us, and we live in what's called adhesion with the upper force. And what is the upper force? To be above time, space, motion, to be above all problems and troubles, to be in heaven. And it's really possible. It's a must. And we'll get there. Only the Kabbalists explain how to do it quickly and maybe even now. Thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. Thank you, Tal. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best. Yeah.